listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Thank you, Danny Zetterman, J.R. Strauss. Hoodie and I back Monday morning, 7 a.m. Crosstalk brought to you by the Hawthorne Racecourse, 1,000-pound thoroughbred athletes back at Hawthorne, Chicago's hometown track. Download the Club Hawthorne app to watch and wager from anywhere. Details at HawthorneRacecourse.com. Thank you, Frank Isola, and love the...
You make the call.
That you make the call.
Thank you, Harry.
If sales is listening, we need IBM to be a sponsor. I know they've been a sponsor for anyone since 1991, but I want them to bring it back.
That's right. Dust off the marketing budget.
Yeah, they got offices downtown. IBM, we have a sponsor for you. IBM, you make
the call. You make the call.
Thank you, Harry.
And don't call it a comeback.
That's it. And that leads us to Carm and Meller.
Hey, Carm, how's it going,
what's
buddy?
Up, boy? Hey,
good,
how you doing?
Good to talk to you, Meller. Good.
How you doing, Meller? Buddy?
Good.
Good to see you.
That's good.
I love this guy.
I tell you what. What? I mean, hey, listen, you step on the line, and, you know, I'll get to it later. Yeah. you got to do it. I mean, you know the choice. So, watching the game.
He's not your show pony.
Watching the game last night, I know you guys did, watching Arizona and Seattle. It just shows you, man, you wish some of that football would be in Soldier Field. You know? I mean, you love that because there's electricity, Meller.
Yep.
When you watch that, you could see on both sides there's electricity offensively.
No,
you don't get that with the Bears.
That's a great point, Hoodie. The moment both teams are on the field, you're excited because you know something good can happen, whether it's, you know, Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson under center. Every play, every time Russell Wilson drops back, you know, sometimes there's a moment where you're like, uh-oh, this could go wrong. And it never does. He rolls out and he either picks up 5-6 yards with his running ability, or he's, you know, throwing these ridiculous balls downfield where DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett can make a play. Every single time. It's not even the same sport the Bears are playing.
That's really funny.
It's true.
What do you call it, Carm? What is it the Bears doing that the Cardinals and Seahawks are doing? It's not even football. What is it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Big pile of crap.
Do you know what it's like? And you know, we those of us that golf make this comparison all the time. Like when you go to a professional golf event, if you go to a PGA Tour event, if you enter next time one comes through Chicago, whenever we can all go back outside again, get on a golf course and you watch them up close, like you get this appreciation for just how good they are. Or when you play with like maybe someone who played in college and they're a scratch golfer or a one handicap golfer, and you watch the way they play, you listen to the sound that the ball makes coming off the club. We always look at each other, those of us that are like average hack golfers, and we go, man, we're not playing golf. Like, that guy's playing golf. We're not playing golf. Those teams are playing football in 2020. The Bears aren't. I don't know what it is, but it's not football. It's not NFL football. And Meller is right. And Hoodie, you're right. Like, exactly what you said. Every time Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers or go on and on around. I mean, you can even start to get excited about Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. Every time they're on the field, Tua maybe, you know, you get a little bit of, like, you get that rush. You get that exhilarating feeling. And you watch that game last night, and they wow you. You watch the players that they're throwing the football to, and they wow you. You watch the design. You watch guys running open. You watch how quick their offense moves. And you just go, man, and as a Bears fan, it sucks because I wish that could be us.
What's the Bears' offensive design? What design would you say?
No clue.
Shea Ghetto? How would you refer? Because there's always
abstract,
design, right?
Just throw a bunch of paint against the wall and see what looks good.
I don't know what it is, but guys like
it's the three and out offense.
Cliff Kingsbury, and you know, people get you were making fun of that hire all you want, like. That he's playing chess. Nagy's playing checkers. That's it. You watch that offense and you go, yeah, okay, I could get behind that. And they're not perfect. I mean, I get it. There's no team in the NFC is really perfect. There's no NFL team that might be perfect. I get they're not perfect. They're 6-4. Murray still has his ups and downs sometimes. And you know, like, but you watch that offense and tell me that you don't look at it and go, wow, I wish that was us.
It's amazing how bad we have been my entire
life.
Except for a few years.
95.
But even a quarterback.
1995.
Okay.
The only year.
Kramer was awesome.
95, yeah.
With Trestman's first year.
Trestman's first year was good. Yep.
Yeah, and they went 8-8. It wasn't like we were winning.
How would you assess Jim Miller's time here? Don't you think that was pretty good, too?
Yeah, but it was. But that defense was good, too. You know, Jim Miller always felt like he was doing enough, but never nothing I got excited about in comparison to the rest of the offenses around the league. 95 with Eric Kramer and Trestman's first year.
Yes.
But the defense was already, you know, going backwards at that point. So Trestman, even though the offense was playing well, the defense was starting to lose it. And so they can never play complementary football.
That's it.
But even when we had, like, Eric Kramer in 1995, 96 wasn't good. Like,
no, of course
the
not.
Chiefs know that every year for the foreseeable future, hey, man, we may have a game where Patrick throws three picks, but 9 times out of 10, we're going to whip your ass offensively.
Yeah.
We don't ever get that.
Nope.
And unbelievable. By the way, this is the anniversary of Walter Payton running for 275 yards in a 10-7 win.
Against Minnesota, right?
Yes, sir.
Behind that line. They were talking about it on sports radio back then.
Well,
how can Walter get it done behind that line? Jiggins!
How many carries?
275?
I'll say 34.
I was going to go 38.
35?
40 carries.
Yeah, woo! 40 carries.
Yeah. We talked about the Bears playing a different sport. That was a different sport than what we're playing today.
He had the flu.
Yeah.
And line them up, let's go.
The real flu game.
That's
a flu game.
Not the food poisoning game.
Now, see, there's a fun exercise, Meller, for fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
Do it from 1979. How many receivers do you take?
Oh, God.
Oh,
maybe a run on quarterbacks and running backs, and that'd be it, right?
That's it.
Maybe a couple of wide receivers going back to that Walter era.
It's interesting because the difference is, though, that it's still in today's game of fantasy football, the few running backs who actually get 20 to 25 touches a game, they are, you know, they're the guys who go in the first round because there's so few of them. Back then, though, you had every team had their bell cow back who was expected to carry the ball 25 times minimum.
Yeah.
So actually, if you go back there, like, you know, it's a little bit later, but like Marino was one of the few quarterbacks who was taken in the, you know, who you knew would be taken in the first round because he was the only guy who was throwing it around like that back then.
Mm-hmm. And he went 6th out of 6 quarterbacks in that draft.
Yeah.
How about that? In the first round, yeah.
I think if I'm drafting during that time in the early 80s, like, I'm going for my best quarterbacks because I know it sounds crazy, but those quarterbacks were prolific back then. I can run about 15 deep and say if my last pick is Warren Moon, I'm still pretty good.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right?
Think about some of those.
Yes.
Who was Eric Coryell's quarterback?
Dan Fouts.
Dan Fouts. Yeah.
I'll be doing well. I can beat you in fantasy with Dan Fouts. So I got my tight end, definitely a lot of tight ends on that, right? Well,
no, and it's a supply and demand thing. So, like, you bring up the point, like, it was back then, it was harder to get the quarterbacks who would throw the ball 30 plus times a game. Yeah. You know, it was like reversed. Now, every quarterback in the league, except for if you're a competent offense aside from the Bears, you know, throws the ball, and the short passes are your run game now. That's what football has become.
And there was some of that was starting in the 80s, and it was all because of Bill Walsh. Like, if you were picking 10th in a fantasy draft in 85, I'm taking, like, Roger Craig hoodie, and I'm happy with it, you know?
Oh,
I'm good. I got a dual threat running back.
Did you guys see the Bears stat that I tweeted out from Chris Kamka at NBC?
I don't think so.
So, on their first drive of the second half for 10 games, average time of possession is 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Brutal.
Total first downs, total for those 10 drives, 4.
Oh, those are the halftime adjustments.
The kick return. We took the next possession after the Patterson kick return.
They're obviously worst in the NFL. It's no surprise in third quarter scoring differential. They're 10 points clear of anybody else in the league, guys. And Meller just said it. Like, what are they doing in the locker room? What are you doing at halftime exactly? If that's what you're producing when you come out, it's terrible. There's so much wrong with this team, guys. Meller and I are going to discuss it today a little bit too. I mean, this is not just bad. They're dangerously close to being in as bad of shape as any team in the NFL.
Yeah.
It was like Jeff made the point yesterday. At least there is something at the end of the tunnel here for the Jets. They might not win a game this year, but it's going to be Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields.
Yep.
You know, the Bengals don't have a lot of wins. The Bengals might only win 3 or 4 games, But we might be talking about Joe Burrow, you know, 5 years from now, just like we used to talk about Peyton Manning. Well, Peyton Manning went 30-13 in that first year, but look at Peyton Manning. And, you know, like, they're in as bad of shape as anybody because I don't know how they get better. They're not going to draft one of the quarterbacks. They're going to win 8 games, guys.
Okay, well, let me ask you something. AFC North, the Bengals are 2-6-1. Let's assume they finish 2-13-1, and they somehow have the number one pick.
Mm.
They've got Joe Burrow, and now they got Trevor Lawrence sitting there. Are you offering them whatever they want for Joe Burrow? And if you're the Bengals, are you trading Joe Burrow because you're getting Trevor Lawrence? What are you doing?
My guess is they're holding Joe Burrow. I don't know. What do you guys think?
See, Burrow is interesting because we've had this conversation about the Dolphins with Tua. And, right. like, Tua, 3 games in, like, he's made some plays where you're yeah. like, wow. The only reason he wasn't the first overall pick himself.
Injury.
You know, well, yeah, the injury coupled with Burrow having the most ridiculous college football season in the history of a quarterback. yeah. So, like, outside of that, Tua would have been the first overall pick. You know, we yep. were talking about tanking for Tua last year, and then it just kind of went sideways. But he looks like he's healthy again, and he's made some plays in his first 3 starts where you're like, wow, that kid looks like a franchise quarterback. Burrow, because he's from Ohio, you know, that's the one thing where I think the Bengals might be one of the few teams who might actually hang on to Joe Burrow and not, you know, be willing to trade away the first overall pick in what is going to likely be Trevor Lawrence. Mm. But everybody else, like, you know, I think they probably forego most teams who would have a chance to pick that high would forego their current quarterback and trade him away. Like, the Jets will trade away Sam Darnold. There's no Absolutely. Question yeah. about it. No question. I think then the question is, are you willing to give up maybe a second round pick for Sam Darnold if you're the Bears?
Sam is a Bear.
I don't think I
bear.
Am.
Guys. I'm not.
Sam's a Bear.
I don't
bear.
Think I am either. I don't know. I don't know.
Reclamation projects? I mean, Sam Darnold's career has been littered with injuries. I don't know if he's ever really had the opportunity to show what he can actually do. You know?
It would scare me a little. Like, I got to be honest.
No, I agree with you, Carm, but beggars can't be choosers here. The problem for the Bears is, I mean, if you're picking in the middle of the draft, I don't know what you're doing. Like, I don't want Ryan Pace to go and, you know, package a bunch of picks to move up for another quarterback.
Well, right. Ultimately, it's about the line, though, for me. You know, you're not going in the right direction anyway.
Yeah.
Where are you going? Are you as good as the Green Bay Packers?
Nope.
Are you as good as some of the top teams in the NFC?
Nope. No.
So
you know what? That might be the silver lining, is that you can pivot if you're the Bears, knowing that you can't get a franchise quarterback in this draft, mm-hmm. but maybe you can get yourself a franchise lineman to build around.
Monday, because we'll be coming off a no Bears game. Hoodie, we got to talk about if, you know, look, see how the Bengals do, see how some of these teams do. Like, if there's a chance to trade for a franchise-changing quarterback because that team's taking Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, what do you do?
I'd be willing to do it, but not with this regime.
Correct.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. You guys have a great show.
Well, that's our show today, Cap, so there you can go. Do it on Monday.
Cap, I got a bone to pick with you real quickly.
Oh, boy.
And Miller!
Good job, buddy.
You've said it a couple times over the last couple weeks. You keep saying, Danny, you've been my producer like for 5 years now. Did you not forget I produced your show in 2015 and 2016?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
I mean, is it that memorable? I mean, mm-hmm. come on. Give me a little credit, Cap.
I mean, you know. Okay,
have
a
great
on you.
Have a great weekend.
What up, Pete? I'm sorry. My mic's still on.
Love you, Merc. All right. You guys have a great show.
Bye, boys.
Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning at 7. Have a good one. See ya.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
All right, happy Friday, everybody. It's a football Friday. Bears on bye, mercifully, I suppose. It'll give us a chance to do something else this weekend. Watch other games. I think we got to get the Christmas lights up this weekend, too.
It's a beautiful day to do it, Carm. You better get out there today, though.
I think today and tomorrow, right? Tracy said make sure you wrap everything up today and tomorrow when she joined us yesterday, Tracy Butler. Because come Sunday, it sounds like it's going to take a turn for the worse with some rain.
Yeah, and I would advise, based on the forecast, what it's looking like, today's probably your perfect window if you can make it happen.
As soon as we're done, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's pretty warm out right now. So it's good weather to do it right now as opposed to as opposed to what you can do it tomorrow, but it's not going to be nearly as nice as it is today.
Meller's sitting in once again for Yerk. Johnny Hanson will be back on Monday. It'll be the week of Thanksgiving. All joking aside, it will be kind of a – I'm sort of glad that the Bears have reached their bye, and because it just – we don't have to a pitiful offensive performance this weekend. It'll allow us to enjoy the rest of the NFL card on Sunday, I think, John.
Yeah, we can all use a bye from the Bears at this point, right? Four losses in a row.
Yeah.
Four losses in a fashion where there is really no hope. Like, you start out 5-1 and you run off four losses in a row. And like I was mentioning with Dan Weider yesterday when we were talking to him, the scores that they've put up are actually more flattering to what they've done offensively if you've watched them firsthand. Because, you know, they've added a couple, two or three garbage touchdowns over the last 4 weeks that have kind of boosted their point totals. But the reality is, anybody who has watched this team now offensively, I don't have any hope for you. I don't have any answers, and it doesn't seem like Matt Nagy or Bill Lazor do either.
I feel like that's the case in all their losses. It's a salient point, right? Even going back to the first loss, when they dropped that first game at home after the 3-0 start to the Colts, right? Final score of that game was 19-11, please. That game wasn't that close at any point because the offense was truly horrific in that game.
Yep.
But like you just said, there was a garbage touchdown late. The Rams game was pretty much a blowout. You knew they were never going to be in that one. I shouldn't even that was still only a two-score game, but okay.
But that's the point. It was 24-3. 24-3, and the Bears add a fourth-quarter touchdown. So you had to get, like we're talking, like, they're putting up virtually, you know, in terms of touchdowns, nothing burgers for you until the game is already out of hand.
Same thing in the New Orleans game, really, that they somehow miraculously they came back to force overtime. That might have been their best offensive performance, and even that one was sloppy and disjointed. Tennessee was an embarrassment. Again, that was, I believe, what was that? That was 17-0 at one point, right? It finishes 24-17, but it was 17-0 late in the third quarter.
17-0 and no real hope.
No.
And then at one point, it was 24-3. It was 24-3.
Yeah, 24-3, that's right.
Until, you know, they scored a touchdown with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And then, 24-10, Titans still have no, they're not scared. They're not thinking the Bears have any real chance. Now they add a touchdown to Jimmy Graham with a minute left. So they found themselves clawing back into that game where if they could recover a desperation onside kick, they would have had a shot. But as most people know, and these days in the NFL, an onside kick is it's worse than it's ever been.
Yeah, it's almost impossible. And they almost covered that game, too. But to Jeff's point, that wasn't close. That game was never close. And then the Minnesota game, while, yeah, it was close, they had some chances at the end. If Anthony Miller's arm is maybe 1 inch longer, it's a different result. But the offense still produced a grand total of 6 points for you. And you got a punt return touchdown in the third quarter. I'm sorry,
kickoff return touchdown,
in the third quarter to start the second half. And that was it. It is truly embarrassing. It is hard to watch. We've made the joke. I don't even know that it's a joke. I find that they put you to sleep. They are so bad and so boring, and I think we are so sick of this, that a lot of times you can sit and watch them on offense or watch their games and start to doze off. That wasn't the case last night with Thursday Night Football, I'll tell you that much.
No, every time you watch those guys go back to pass, you're glued to the television because something amazing can happen. You can see Kyler Murray, throw a Hail Mary to DeAndre Hopkins and, roll out of trouble. You can see Russell Wilson every time he drops back to pass in the pocket, scramble around and make something amazing happen. Throw, a ridiculous touchdown pass to Kalen Zakarius Metcalf last night. I mean, it's fantastic to watch. As a football fan, the Bears offend your offensive sensibilities.
You know what? I challenge our fans right now, anyone. You know, we're talking like we're in such bad shape. What's something good about the Bears going forward? Like,
going forward,
yeah,
defense is still good, like, but now you're wasting that. Like, I know what you're saying, Merck. You're not talking about like what's good now, like, because you could call in and still say the defense is good now, and it is.
Well, maybe it's a specific player, Carm. You're like, man, I'm excited for this guy's future.
Roquan has really looked amazing this year, and it's being
good.
It's being wasted.
Yes.
And maybe this gets to a broader point too. Is look, it is fun as Bears fans. It's great to have an awesome defense. That's football. You really, you get the adrenaline rush when you see a big hit and your defense come up with a big stop. But in 2020, the way the game has shifted, not just with the penalties that are called that have been instituted in the game. You know, receivers can no longer they go over the middle without fear of, you know, being, you know, any headhunters out there, which is good. Yes, absolutely. You know, it's great that that is how football has evolved. But because of that, I don't think you can. It's no longer like 50-50, or if you want to add in special teams, you want to say like 45-45-10, however you divvy up the percentages. It's no longer, you know, to me, it's not a three-phase game like where you're just dividing offense and defense up evenly. I'm sorry. NFL football, professional football, it's now like a 70-30 split where the offense is in control of what the game is. And in addition, the running quarterbacks, where you have the ability to go 11 on 11 because you need every defender to account for every offensive player on the field, it makes it that much more difficult on the defense. You need to invest in a competent, at very least a competent offense. And if you want to be a true Super Bowl contender, I think you have to be an elite offense or close to it, Carm.
And I think you're right, and the data supports that in recent years anyway. As this has shifted, I think Jeff is 100% right. And I recently saw a stat, and forgive me if I might have the exact period of time wrong on this, but I think it was going back to 2008. So that's a big sample now.
Yeah.
Okay. Going back to like 2008, I believe there is only one team that won the Super Bowl that wasn't in the top half of the league in offensive DVOA, and this team was still 17th or 18th. So just on the fringe of being sort of in that midpoint, there was only one team, and you guys could probably guess who it was. You guys remember who it was? 2008?
2008. I mean, Seattle's defense was great. What about the Denver Broncos?
That's it. The Denver Broncos, in a year in which Peyton Manning was completely done and toast, and everybody knew it, and that offense wasn't very good. That's the only team to win the Super Bowl that wasn't a top, you know, half offensive DVOA team over the regular season. There's only one example. And I don't see that trend, with maybe a few outlier exceptions. I mean, that's always possible. I understand that. But I don't see that trend going away because of the way the game has changed.
Yeah,
so you're right.
And that's my point, is ultimately look at all the teams right now that are top the league. Sure. I mean, who's the best defense in the league? Pittsburgh Steelers right now?
Probably Pittsburgh. You know, I think Tampa's really good. I think the Colts are really good. One of those three.
Sure, Tampa's good, but they've also, there's been a couple times where they've been bludgeoned by the Saints. So, you know.
That's true. They have trouble against the Saints.
For whatever reason. And, you know, so the Steelers have an offense that is also clearly a top 10 offense in the league. You know, maybe the Colts are the team that you say they're led by their defense and with a
pedestrian offense.
Yeah. Yeah. But even still, it's more productive than anything the Bears throw out there.
Of course.
And I just don't know if you can win relying on your defense to lead the way anymore. And in the way the NFL has evolved, you need to build your team around a quarterback. And that's why I look through the league. I look at what the Bears have right now on the bye week, as every team does the self-evaluation. And I wonder to myself, you know, how do you get out of this hole if you're the Chicago Bears?
It's a good question. Fans, you can chime in with us as we've reached the bye. It's a good topic for this Football Friday without the Bears playing this weekend. Like, what is the hope? Is there any? Is there anybody you're excited about? I mean, truly excited about. 312-332-3776. And we'll continue to pore over how this organization is going to get better. And if the decision makers that are in charge now can be allowed to make decisions again, are they going to get the COVID pass just because, like Waddle's been saying, under normal circumstances, would they be blowing everything up? And even with COVID, do they have to? Because this is all kinds of bad. And they made a huge risk, or took a huge gamble when they traded a couple of first round picks for Khalil Mack, thinking that they had the coach and the quarterback in place to be a serious Super Bowl threat. And that has disappeared like a fart in the wind. 312-332-3776 is the number. You're welcome to join us, Bears fans. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. Meller is at Jeff_Meller. He's in for Yurko. It's Carmen and Yurko. We'll be right back.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _Chicago.
Boom, boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom.
I believe that's the IT room Mel, are not it room.
Yeah, you know
what? For, when writing for broadcast, one should make it easier for the announcer to read the copy, and there should be a hyphen in there, and I know there isn't in that particular piece of copy.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, you see IT, and, you know, I've 39 years of reading, I read it as it. That's on me, apparently, so my bad. IT room. IT room.
How about a hyphen? It'd make it a lot easier for the person
or
doing the reading.
Maybe a couple periods. What the hell?
Something like that, you
but
know?
Hey.
Yes, that would be the IT room. But I got a kick out of it when you said the it room. I started laughing. But yeah, when you just, you know, you're breezing through it, you've been reading that word for most of your life. And it
as it. Oh, well.
As it, yes. It's Carvin and Yurko. Meller sitting in for the good kid. 312-332-3776. If you want to bounce out to the phones, Meller, we can talk to some Bears fans. And we'll continue to discuss how they're going to try to turn. Forget about turning the season around. This season is lost.
Ugh.
How are they going to fix this franchise?
It's lost, and yet still they are, you know, right square in the playoff contention. They're in the hunt, as Dan Weider pointed out, and they will be for a while because the schedule is, I mean,
they might make the playoffs. Don't get me wrong, but this is a lot. This is they're not going anywhere.
It's brutal. They have three games on their schedule right now: the Lions, Texans, and Jaguars. Which are all very winnable games. And
very
then they still have the Vikings remaining and then a couple games against your division rival, the Packers, where I don't expect them to beat the Packers in either game. But, you know, rivalry games, weird things happen sometimes. So all those games, the Bears could easily, they have the opportunity to win nine games here without doing too much.
They luck their way to 5-1. It's as simple as that. No team in the last 50 years has ever rallied. No team, no franchise, guys, has ever rallied from two fourth quarter deficits of 17 points or more. The Bears did it twice in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
They were, without question, the luckiest, flukiest 5-1 team in the history of this league. Because of that, though, and because of the added playoff team or teams, they're probably going to luck their way bass-ackwards into the playoffs. But this is not a playoff team. This is not a good football team by any stretch of the imagination. And I sort of hate to say that because the defense holds up its end of the bargain most weeks. But the offense is truly a joke.
And they are actually on the outside looking in right now. So,
they are. But like you said, there's a path for them to get to eight, and maybe they luck their way into a ninth because they've been lucky this year. Maybe they luck their way into a ninth, and maybe they do add that other playoff team, and they're suddenly eight, you know, Jeff, and they get in. But this is a lost season, let's face it. They are such a mess offensively, and there's really no hope on the horizon. That's the big picture item here. That's what we have to try to figure out. How can they possibly fix this offense, and can they do it quickly enough while this defense is still really good before it gets too old? That's the question for, you know, I think all of us as Bears fans. Like, how is the organization going to fix the problem?
So how are they going to do it, Carm? I think Tim and Tinley Park might have an idea. Tim, you're on with Carmen and Yurko. Meller in for Yurk.
Hi, fellas. How are you?
Great, buddy.
Listen, do you ever think the Bears would sit down with the Rooney family and learn how to build a franchise since they've been so successful in the last 50 years?
No, I mean, why would the Rooney family want to help? You know, they're a competitor, I guess. I don't know what they do differently, Tim, to be honest with you. I don't know who in the Rooney family is. Obviously, people there get football, and I don't know that anybody in the McCaskey family does. I don't mean to be I like George McCaskey as a person. We've been around George. George seems like a very nice man. I think he is extremely passionate about his family business, and he really wants to win. I really do believe that. Mm. I just don't know that George has a really much of a clue.
Well, and the one thing I'll say is, look, I don't get overly consumed by the McCaskeys owning the team because I don't think that's changing anytime soon. Well,
of course it's not. There's no way it's changing.
But I do think there's easily a path where they could get this right. The problem is, if you believe, you know, the truth is that, you know, I don't know if it would have been perfect, but you know, when they made the decision between Ryan Pace and Chris Ballard, word is that Chris Ballard wanted to cut ties with Jay Cutler immediately. And that was not on the agenda for what the McCaskeys wanted to do. And so Ryan Pace was more than willing to keep Jay Cutler in-house for a year and see what happened. And ultimately, you need to be listening. If this is the whoever is going to run your franchise, you need to listen to what they're telling you, and you need to, you know, you can't be afraid of spending money, because ultimately, what has happened now? You chose Ryan Pace because he sold you on Jay Cutler for a year and said we would figure it out after that if we need to, you know, continue to go in a different direction. And so you went with Ryan Pace because he told you what you wanted to hear. The thing that made, you know, for your business was, you know, more financially sound because you were already locked to Jay Cutler. Fine. That was your choice. But now you've, I think at this point, probably chosen the inferior GM to run your team. And as a result, you have set your franchise back at least 5 years. And, Carm, if we listen to what Waddle's been saying, you know, that they don't have the appetite necessarily to move on from Pace and Nagy right now because of the pandemic, what are you going to do? You going to let Ryan Pace go ahead and choose the next quarterback for this franchise?
I don't know how you can, to be honest. I, and it's easy for me to say it's not my money, it's not my franchise. The fan in me, the analyst in me, says, how could they possibly allow this group to try to fix this after all the mistakes, all the missteps that have gotten to them to this point?
Let's go to South Carolina and say good afternoon to Patrick. Hey, Patrick, you're on with Carmen Yerk.
Hey, guys, how's it going? Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to get your perspective on what I think is maybe the biggest challenge facing the organization this offseason, and it's the fear that they may just hold status quo. With Nagy only having 2 years left on his deal, and I think Pace with one more, my concern is having a lame duck GM select the next quarterback, which we all think they're going to take in the first round, and then maybe cutting ties with them next year, and now you're forcing a QB on a new GM and a new coach that they weren't tied to, and it feels like the Bears continuously get into this swirl that they can't get out of. So want to get your perspective on that, and then the thoughts of how likely you think it is they may be willing to move Phillips into a behind-the-scenes role like the Bulls did with Pax, and maybe maximize what he does well and his strengths, but then bring in a football guy to run the operation.
Well, I think they've already kind of done that, to be honest. Right, Jeff? I mean, Ted Phillips doesn't have the kind of say he once did in matters of personnel.
It seems like it to me. You know, once they made the move to Ryan Pace, it felt like that was Ted Phillips taking a back seat, didn't it? The problem for me is the selection of Ryan Pace, you know? I mean, yeah.
That's where they don't get it. Like, is there anybody that can see, like, who's got the real football vision in the family, and who can find the right candidates? You know, who can find the right GM and then help that GM find the right coach? Like, is there anybody in the family that has the skill set to do that?
But that's the thing, though. Where we're sitting right now, you cannot let, if you're not sold on Ryan Pace, and I don't know why you would be at this point.
I don't know either.
You know, there's been too many first-round picks where they've been an absolute disaster. Forget the fact that they're not even starter-caliber players. They've been absolute disasters. You know what I mean? Like, you can't completely whiff on first-round picks. I mean, I want, generally, you know, I know, like, obviously you're not going to get a Hall of Famer all the time. That's a high bar. But I'd like a guy, if you're, you know, if you're picking in the top 10 consistently, Carm, I'd like a guy who occasionally, you know, is a threat to make a Pro Bowl.
Yeah, of course.
At the bare minimum, much less a starter.
Bare minimum.
Like Kevin White, Leonard Floyd, I mean, Mitchell Trubisky, like just debacles.
It's terrible. It absolutely is. And, you know, the McCaskies have, you know, normally it takes a prolonged run of failure. And then I suppose you say, okay, well, they've been willing to change and admit the error of their ways. They realize they made a mistake with Emery. The problem is they just keep making mistakes. And I don't know how much input Ted Phillips really has anymore in personnel. He really should have none. As Sylvie documented this yesterday, going back to his days when he covered the Bears for so long, and Sylvie laid out for you I'm trying to remember which draft it is now. It's the LT. It's the LaDainian Tomlinson draft. So that was like, what, 2000, 2001?
Yeah.
Something like that? 2001, maybe, because I think A-Train was a rookie, and that was 01,
Michael
right?
Vick, yeah.
Yeah, and so Sylvie laid it out for you. Sylvie was covering the team back then, and he really knew the ins and outs.
2000.
2000, okay. He knew the ins and outs of the organization, and Ted Phillips would not allow Mark Catley to trade up to draft LaDainian Tomlinson.
2001, I'm sorry, Carm.
Okay, it was 2001. That's what I thought.
2001 draft, my bad.
That was A-Train's rookie year. So, and in 2001, it wasn't crazy to still be grabbing running backs in the top five. Okay, this is 20 years ago, folks. It was a totally different era. Mark Catley wanted to go up and draft LaDainian Tomlinson. Ted Phillips said no. So they draft David Terrell instead. Sylvie laid it all out yesterday, and I've heard him discuss it before in the past. I was just getting into the business then. I remember when all this was happening, but Sylvie covered the team. Then late in the first round, and I remember I was at Hallis Hall as a reporter helping Sylvie cover, like grab sound and stuff like that that weekend. Then at the end of the first round, he tried to go back in, Mark Catley, because they wanted a running back. Mm-hmm. So he had drafted David Terrell. He tried to go back in, and somewhere in the 20s, like late 20s.
23.
Okay, 23. He wanted to draft Deuce McAllister. And again, Ted Phillips said no. Now, A-Train turned out okay, too, in fairness. A-Train had a couple good years. He popped for them that first year. But this is what I'm talking about. Why is Ted Phillips being allowed to make those kinds of decisions at any point when the Bears could have had LaDainian Tomlinson? And so he should not have any input on – he never should have had any input on – offense. But this is what the McCaskies do because they don't really know. Oh, let's just let our accountant make football operations decisions. And so when we tell you is there anybody that's got any sense when the old man died, when Muggsy died, unfortunately, and the last of the Hallises died, does anybody have the football sense? And I've wondered that and questioned it for the better part of 20 years. 312-332-3776. More of your calls when we come back.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Go out to Las Vegas at 11:30. Talk to our buddy Todd Furman. And coming up in about an hour, Mike North has his bonus play. Mikey was smoking hot last week. We got odds couple tonight. 7 until 8 full hour of gambling talk as we work our way through week 11 in the NFL. Some great college games, including a couple of big ones in the Big Ten, featuring some undefeated teams like Northwestern hosting Wisconsin. How about IU at Ohio State? First ever top
yes.
10. How about that, Meller? First ever top 10 matchup in the regular season in Indiana Hoosiers history.
It's long been a mantra of mine, Carm. When Indiana and Ohio State square off, that's a game I don't want to miss. The one college football game a year I can't miss.
You know the last time Indiana beat Ohio State?
Oh.
1988. But the last time they beat Michigan before 2 weeks ago was 1987. So
there you go.
There's some synergy going on there.
We have lots of folks, Carm, who want to weigh in. Let's try Alex, who's in Denver. Alex, you're on. Carmen and Yurko, Meller in for Yurk.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about the bright spot in the Bears' offense. As much as I can go in about how bad they are and the offensive line, one guy I have looked at some highlights last night even was Darnell Mooney. He might be one of the top receivers on our team if we had a quarterback or a line that could protect our quarterback to get him the ball. He should have at least four or five more touchdowns of 40, 50 plus yards. But I'm really excited for this guy in the future if we can get a line to block for our quarterback. And I think Nick Foles can do it, but he's throwing scared every time he's back there.
Thanks, Alex. I mean, he's been brutal. I don't think much of Nick Foles as a quarterback, but I honestly thought he'd play better than this.
The combination of Nick Foles with this line is just, it's an awful, awful pairing. It just doesn't work. And, you know, it's why, even though I think Nick Foles is probably a better quarterback than Mitchell Trubisky, it's why I think, seriously, the Bears need to consider whether or not going back to Mitchell Trubisky is best for them for this season, because they have no running game. They can't get any push with their offensive line. At least Trubisky's mobility gives you the threat to run and, you know, keep the chains moving. When you've got a statue back there with this offensive line coming up, it's making everything a disaster right now. You know, I like Mooney. He's looked good. But I am fearful that the way this Allen Robinson contract situation is going, that, you know, Mooney's good as long as he's running, you know, alongside Allen Robinson. If Mooney is the only guy out there, if for whatever reason they need to move off of Allen Robinson because he's unhappy, you know, then I'm a little concerned that Mooney is not necessarily because of his size. You know, he's not a number one. He's a nice complimentary wide receiver when Allen Robinson's your number one.
I agree. And he's obviously become their favorite choice to be the number two wide receiver because look at his snap count, look at his targets. He's clearly their number two wide receiver. I think he's passed Anthony Miller. But you're right, Jeff. He's got to be more of a complimentary piece. So that's a whole other thing we've got to at some point start to pore over. You know, what's going to happen with Allen Robinson? Will they tag him? Will they let him walk? Does he want to be here? Who knows?
Tom is in Glendale Heights. Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, can the Bears do what the White Sox did? Like, you know, the three of us are all White Sox fans. We just watched a rebuild that could potentially be very good. Why can't the Bears do that? I understand it's different sports, and you would want to do something that Ryan Pace never did, which is draft a quarterback every year. But just, you know, hear me out. You know, let's say you're the Bears, the new GM, you fire Pace, you fire Nagy, then you trade Fuller, you trade Hicks, Mack, Jackson, Goldman. Maybe later after you've cleaned some money off, you franchise tag Allen Robinson just to trade him later for another draft pick. I'm only keeping rookies, and I'm keeping Roquan Smith. Other than that, I'm getting as many draft picks as possible. And you have an advantage that the White Sox didn't have, which is that you can actually trade back in the first round to collect more picks. The White Sox couldn't do that. Yeah. So let's say you pick 15. Keep trading back, getting more picks. Maybe you could turn this around in 2 to 3 years because you draft a quarterback every year. You got to rebuild the defense, obviously, as you trade everybody. But as long as you keep getting more and more picks, you have that opportunity.
Pull a Belichick, right? Just keep trading back and back and stockpiling picks.
I compare it more to Bill Walsh, right?
That's where Belichick.
But did he do that when he got the wide receiver, the best wide receiver of all time? But that's what he did, right? He took Jerry Rice late after he kept trading back and trading back and trading back.
I think, Tom, thanks for the call. I think baseball is a little bit more tailor-made for that kind of thing because you're talking about hundreds of players spread across the minor leagues, and you've got so many rounds of the draft. You've got the international players. You've got more avenues to collect players. I think it's easier.
I think the other factor where baseball is so much different than football is just the short career, you know, life of a player in football. Yeah. You know, you're talking most players play less than 3 years in the NFL. Now, certainly, you know, the quarterbacks, and this is maybe why it is so important now in this day and age to identify and find your franchise quarterback, because he's the one guy who you can point to and potentially, if you get it right, have the guy there for 10 to 15 years. You know, that's the one spot where because you're not allowed to hit the quarterback anymore, that's the one guy you can build around. Every other position where speed, strength, and size matters, you know, it's a war of attrition in football. And those guys break down. And as you hit 30 in the NFL, it's not just running backs. As you hit 30 in the NFL, a lot of the, you know, players around you, you just wear down and you're not the same player you were when you were younger, aside from quarterbacks.
Ryan Pace has drafted 39 players as general manager of the Bears over 6 drafts, 1 quarterback. It was Mitchell Trubisky.
Not Pat Mahomes.
I mean, he did talk about, you know, drafting quarterbacks. We got to draft quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks. Really? You drafted 1.
Yeah. Just lip service. And you're right. He never actually adopted that philosophy that, you know, again, until you have it correct, you might as well just keep swinging for the fences every time. Take a cut. Maybe you get lucky. Maybe you find Russell Wilson.
The great Don Pearson told that to Sylvia and me years ago. I never forgot it. Yeah, I mean, like, this 15 years ago, he said the Bears should draft a quarterback on day one every year until they get it right. Back then, day one was rounds 1 and 2. So
yeah.
That's what he wasn't kidding. He said they should draft every year. They should draft a day one quarterback until they know they finally got it right. And this is the stat I love, and I've shared it with you guys. In the last decade, Bill Belichick has drafted more quarterbacks than the Chicago Bears. You let that sink in for a second, ladies and gentlemen. The New England Patriots, with the greatest of all time, have drafted more quarterbacks in the last decade than the Bears. And on that note, we'll be back in just 2 minutes.